Blog Talk Radio.
We Must Die is a poem that makes me a poet among colored Americans. If we must die, let it not be like hogs, hunted and penned in an inglorious pot, while round us bark the mad and hungry dogs, making their mock at our accursed lot. If we must die, oh, let us nobly die, so that our precious blood may not be shed in vain. Then even the monsters we defy shall be constrained to honor us though dead. O kinsmen, we must meet the common foe. Though far outnumbered, let us show us brave, and for their thousand blows, deal one death blow. What though before us lies the open grave? Like men, we'll face the murderers, cowardly pack, pressed to the wall, dying but fighting back.
Who paid reparations on my soul?
Yeah.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. Well, greetings, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to this segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. Well, it is what some people call National Black Poetry Month. So, of course, to play something, to open up with the Gil Scott Heron is certainly more than appropriate, and that is who you just heard. Who's going to pay reparations for my soul? So, obviously, this issue of reparations has indeed been around for quite a while, and folks were not just talking about it. They were singing about it and doing things about it, too. At any rate, welcome to this segment of New Day. And with that said, we are going to pay tribute to Black poets, this being April National Black Poetry Month. But you know what? It's kind of interesting because the more you learn or the more you think you learn or know, the more you seem to not know. Now, just a few years ago, I got, if not acquainted, maybe reacquainted with National Black Solidarity Day. It had been around for 50 plus years, and it's just something that wasn't talked about much in our communities for some interesting reason. Well, there's some other things that have been around for a while for some strange reason. We, many of us, knew nothing about it. Did you know that there was a National Black Poetry Day? Yep, a National Black Poetry Day. And would you believe that it started in 1970? Wow. I mean, who knew? And why don't we know? Why is it that some things that our people used to observe, celebrate, engage in, and so forth, for some strange reason, just seems to escape us? We seem to know little to nothing about certain things. So let me just share with you a little Black history fact, because we're going to start doing it more here on New Day, because it is our job to make sure that we provide information for motivation and definitely for liberation. So check this out. National Black Poetry Day is October the 17th. This day was initially originated in 1970 and officially established in 1985 by the state of Oregon. Oregon? They officiated Black Poetry Day? Anyway, okay, officiated in Oregon, honor past, present, and future Black poets, and to celebrate the importance of Black heritage literacy, along with contributions made by Black poets and writers. The day is in honor of Jupiter Hammond, considered to be the first published Black poet in the United States. He was born on October the 17th, 1711, in Long Island, New York. The day was first proposed by a public library director, Stanley A. Ramson, in 1970 in New York. And in 1985, again, it was introduced and it became a state holiday in Oregon. In 2019, an official blackpoetryday.org site came up and spearheaded in Arizona. Arizona? And has established and highlighted activities and events honoring that day and encouraged national participation. Now, I mean, who knew? I'm curious, did any of you all know about Black Poetry Day, October the 17th? It got started in 1970. You know, again, we've got to start asking some serious questions as to who's doing what or not doing what and why, because something is really kind of strange, meaning we have all these groups, organizations, certainly a lot of poetry, certainly a lot of spoken word folks. But why is it not being promoted or talked about that there is something called Black Poetry Day. Well, you know, when we find out stuff, we always make sure that we step up and help implement it, and so we shall. Just like with Black Solidarity Day, we're going to be stepping up and introducing this day, a national day for Black poetry, because we have, in fact, begin to put together the May Women March National Black Women's Writers Guild so that we can have not only our own poets and writers and so forth, meaning Black women, but that we are organized in such a way that we can not only promote, not only train or educate, you know, the kinds of things that folks really are supposed to do. And certainly there are a lot of groups out there, but again, you don't hear much about them. Well, we're going to change that. So again, with MWM25, it is our mission. We're going to go on a national tour. So the reunion is not just going to be one day. It's going to be a year-long celebration, commemoration of not only the largest gathering in the world of any women anywhere ever in one location, but also a year celebration and commemoration of the greatness and glory of African women, Black women throughout the diaspora from antiquity to present day. Yep, that's what we're going to be doing. We're going to make sure that people not try to continue to dismiss us or push us to the side as they tried to do over the years. Well, that won't be happening any longer. I can guarantee you that. So listen, tonight, as we move into this thing called National Poetry Month, we're going to talk with, hopefully, Baba Bilal Suni Ali. He's presently, of course, kind of, recuperating from some things, so we might have a representative. But for those that do not know, Baba Bilal Suni Ali, who is one of my personal elder advisors, he was, in fact, one of the original members of Gil Scott-Heron Midnight Band. Okay, so certainly he can shed and share some information about the great Gil Scott-Heron, his work, his legacy, etc., etc. The other thing we're going to talk about, of course, is we're going to give you a political prisoners report. Of course, we have some updates coming up for Mumia Abu-Jamal, whose Earth Day will be coming up on April the 24th. So, of course, there'll be a lot of stuff going on throughout the U.S. in representing or focusing on to free Mumia. And also, we're going to give you information about Sundiata Akoli as well as Reverend Joy Powell. We're really concerned about Reverend Joy. Because I was going to read some of her poetry tonight, and for whatever reason, I couldn't find the printout, so I went to her website. Her website is down. This was a few days ago. I checked it again today, and it's still down. Now, that website has been up for, you know, several years, and Reverend Joy has posted things almost daily because she does, like, a daily message. For whatever reason, the website is now down. Although you go to the website, her face is there, her picture's there, but it'll say not found. I find that real strange and also very concerning. So, again, we've begun to put some calls out to see, you know, what we can find out, because that's just real strange. At any rate, that'll be one of the things we're going to talk about a little more tonight, the fact that there is a Black woman who is, in fact, a political prisoner. There may be others, but we definitely know of her. We're going to also be talking a little more about the whole issue of Black women in incarceration as the Million Woman Ministries prepare to become more involved in prison issues directly by going into some of the women's prisons throughout the U.S. and bringing our program agenda and also our sisterhood. We'll be telling you more about that as part of our MWM 25 as well. Again, this is not just about a march. It's not just about an event. It's definitely about a movement that will be issuing or revealing more about the Black Print Agenda 25. Okay, let me see, what else do we have going on here? We also going to get a report on a former political prisoner, of course, Brother Daruba Bin Ladd. There is some things going on with him, and we're going to get a special report in regards to some health issues and the emergency that's being put out in regards to that on his behalf. And so very shortly we'll be talking with Brother Kamal Franklin, who will be joining us. He is the founder of the Community Movement Builders that is based in New York, and also they have some chapters in other locations such as Atlanta. So we'll be doing that as well. So that kind of gives you an idea of what we're going to be talking about tonight. Again, in talking about Babasunda Ada Ekoli, we want to give you just a brief message. I'm going to read it. It's from Sister Asada Shakur, and it says, "I want so much for Sundi Ada to know how much he is loved and respected. I want him to know how much he is appreciated by revolutionaries all over the world. I want Sundi Ada to know how much he is cherished by African people, not only in the Americas, but all over the diaspora. I want him to know how much we admire his strength, his courage, his kindness, and compassion. Sundi Ada loves freedom, and we must struggle for the life, for the life and freedom of Sundi Ada." Okay, and that is the words from Sister Asada Shakur. All right, what we're going to do next, as we are waiting for Baba Bilal Sunni Ali to call in the meantime, we're going to go back to a few moments of Gil Scott-Heron. Again, this is National Black, National Poetry Month, okay? And so with that share, we're going to share some poetry with you, the great Gil Scott-Heron. By the way, his Earth Day was yesterday, and there was a big celebration in New York. Hopefully we'll be getting a report on that a little later on. In the meantime, Gil Scott-Heron.
So, Whitey on the Moon. And it was inspired by some whiteys on the moon. So I want to give credit where credit is due.
A rap done bit my sister Nell with Whitey on the Moon. Her face and arms began to swell, and Whitey's on the moon. I can't pay no doctor bills, but Whitey's on the moon. 10 years from now, I'll be paying still while Whitey's on the moon. You know, the man just upped my rent last night, because Whitey's on the moon. No hot water, no toilets, no lights, but Whitey's on the moon. I wonder why he's upping me, because Whitey's on the moon. Well, I was already giving him 50 a week, and now Whitey's on the moon. Taxes taking my whole damn check. Junkies make me a nervous wreck. The price of food is going up. And as if all that crap wasn't enough, a rat done bit my sister Nell with Whitey on the moon. Her face and arms began to swell, and Whitey's on the moon. With all that money I made last year for Whitey on the moon, how come I ain't got no money here? Whitey's on the moon. You know, I just about had my bill of Whitey on the moon. I think I'll send these doctor bills, air mail special. To Whitey on the Moon. Thank you.
Classic Gil Scott-Heron. Well, as you can tell, you know, this was some of course call him the father of rap, because again his messages, his way of delivering, it kind of set, if not a standard, it certainly set some examples in what we have now seen, or what we are now seeing, rather. There was one more I wanted to share with everyone. Okay, I think I have it right here, so I'm going to try to pull it up, and then we're going to talk with Baba Bilal. Suni Ali, of course, again, was one of the original members of the Midnight Band. But one more, Gil Scott, and then we're going to get with it.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on tag and skip out the beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the rockers or pop without commercials. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a whistle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from the Harlem Sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the streets of a war theater and will not star Nancy Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Junior. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you lose 5 pounds in them because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the gate bus or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on the 4th of 29. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on the rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been chosen for just the proper occasion. A brighter day, the revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news, no pictures of Harry Harlow, Mr. Racist, and Joshua Nassif blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Eagles, and Humperdinck on the Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with coke. The revolution will not fight church and make calls bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
All right, once again, classic, Gil Scott Heron, The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. Well, speaking of that, before we get ready to get into the dialogue with Baba Bilal, Suni Ali, I want to really kind of start focusing a little more on, you know, what's going on in our communities, meaning, you know, we're coming up with some new kind of, if not concepts, but certainly some new ways of doing some things that are different and maybe not being so new, but definitely different for right now in this particular time period. And that is, you know, how are we going to move forward with identifying fake folk in our community and the necessity to do so? Now, I know for some, that might be politically incorrect or not correct, whatever you want to call it. But the fact of the matter is that a lot of our people are being misled, misguided by people who are just shysters. And that puts it mildly. You know, liberation struggle has become a business. Liberation, the fight for our people and justice have become a hustle for some. And unfortunately, because you have new folks that are coming in, they don't know the difference. They don't know about the real kind of dedication, commitment, hard work, et cetera, that really represents our real movements for liberation. And so what people are seeing now is some other versions of things, right? And so we're going to make sure that we're able to identify that to a greater extent and also set some examples. So in the very near future, you're going to hear us talk more about that. But before we do that, I'd like to also raise the question. I'm sure many have heard about what happened on Sunday, meaning the slap that went across the world. Yep, we're talking about, of course, Will Smith. Now, I'm not going to drag this out or go into a whole lot of conversation about it because there's enough conversation going on about it, but we'll be from Philly, I still have to say a little something. Sometimes I hear people saying certain things as if they would expect something different or something else, forgetting that it's Hollywood, y'all. So what kind of other standards are we looking at or thinking about beyond a certain point? That's number one. The other point, number two, is, I mean, who really gives a good whatever? For real, for real. Now, that's the other thing. I mean, so it's really something, a good conversation. And you have to admit, it was definitely entertaining, which is what that was about, you know, fundamentally anyway, Hollywood. So it was entertaining. Now, of course, it has some other pieces to it. But let me just give you the version from the streets, you know, here in Philly. The street version is, go ahead with your bad self. Now, I know for some that might not seem to be the way, but you don't live in Philly. So there's certain flavors and certain things that might not, you know, be to your liking or appealing or that you even understand. But as we all know, every city where Black folks are have their own flavor, right? So, again, we're not advocating any unnecessary violence on any of our people, but I'm from Philly, so I can tell you straight up, there's some stuff, you might not like it, but let me tell you, and that was a Philly moment. For me, that was a Philly moment. Now, I've gotten a lot of, you know, feedback, you know, with me saying that because I had sent it out to a few people. And, of course, they were like, no, sister, you know, he wasn't really, he was ego and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you know what? If you've never been in a situation in your life where at a split moment, for whatever reason, you do something without the kind of intellect, logic, or thought, you just do it, right? I've been there. I've done that. So I recognize it when I see it. And the proof of the pudding for that, for me, is the fact that he has now resigned from the Academy. Now for us, that means absolutely nothing. It's no big deal. But for certain people, I mean, you know, that's something that is meaningful to them. So for him to risk that or take that action, again, from my observation, that's just, you know, there comes a time sometimes in folks' life where something happens, and at that point, you just don't give a good one, and you just respond in a way. Again, I'm from Philly. I've seen that before. In fact, I have seen it up close and personal, so I recognize it when I see it, and I'm not just saying this indigenous to Philly. It's just how it is. Anyway, I just want to give my little spin on that, and by the way, yes, we are inviting Jada to the Million Woman March 25. That was already going to happen before all of this happened. Why? Oh, guess what? She was there in 97. So it ain't like, you know, there's something new to us. All right? And there's some other things we're going to be conveying as well. You know, we also send out a call to some other people to join us because we know that for some folks, they got to hear big names in order for them to do the right thing. But I digress. We'll get to that later. All right, family, tonight, of course, again, you just heard the great Gil Scott-Heron. We heard three pieces. The last one, of course, was The revolution will not be televised. Prior to that, we heard Whitey on the Moon, and to open us up tonight, who's going to pay reparations? Now, you know, that's like so appropriate for right now, because a lot of people are talking about reparations. So with that said, okay, hold on one moment. I'm going to dial up Baba Bilal Sunni Ali. I just saw him in queue, and I'm not sure what happened. So let me see if, oh, no, that wasn't him. I thought it was somebody else. Okay, we're going to see if we can get him now. Wow, I thought I just saw him in queue, but maybe that was someone else. So we're going to try to call him and see if we can get him on. So wait, let me do this first. Let me check. Family, give me 1 minute. I just want to check to see if he needs for us to call him. Hold on 1 minute. All right. In the meantime, what I'd like to do is just remind everyone. Oops, wait a minute. Give me 1 minute. Here we go. Just remind everyone. Hey, Baba, do I need to call you?
Yeah, you can call me.
Okay, I'm going to call you on the board number. Call you right now. Thank you. Okay, sorry about that, y'all, because I knew something was going on and I had to check and see. So, yep, he needs for us to call him. So, let's do that. Okay, hold up. Okay, again, I want to remind everyone that Mumia Abu-Jamal Earth Day is 24th. Something big is going to be happening on July the 3rd, I think it is. Brother Mike Africa is planning a major event in New York. In D.C. There's going to be a major event in D.C., and that event is going to be in recognition of that being the day that the actual sentence for Mumia came about here in Philadelphia, the sentencing when he was sentenced to die. Okay, and so there's a major thing that's going to be happening on that day again, July the 3rd, and I'm sure we will have Brother Mike Africa on between now and then to really give some updates. If not him, then Sister Pam Africa, one of them. Lastly on that, and then we're going to bring Baba Bilal in. Oops, hold on. Let me just check that number real quick. Sister Pam and I attempted to go to a concert the other night. A sister who's from Africa came in to do a concert, and interestingly enough, we were not able to get in because, oh, wow, wait a minute. Hold on. That was the wrong number, family. Give me a moment. Okay, there we go. Because I didn't have a card, a COVID card. Now, I could have swore that was over with, but obviously not. And so we literally could not see the concert because myself and another person did not have a COVID card. So I don't know if that's still going on with you all, but it definitely is happening here in Philly. So just, you know, be aware. If you don't have your COVID card, you might not be getting into certain places even still. Okay, we're ready now. So let's do this. Hold on. We're going to hopefully connect with all of the miles some more.
Please press 5 to have your call connected.
Okay, let's try that again, because that was real strange. So 7-0. Okay, let's try that again. Something went wrong there. All right, here we go. Hopefully this will allow us to get in.
Peter Lynn.
Yes, greetings, Baba. Yes, thank you. How are you this evening?
It's a powerful evening, you know.
Yes,
Marvin
Gaye.
Yeah, Marvin Gaye on the Bill Scott Heron, and you know, and I can't, you know, and this week has been a powerful week joining them in company. You know, Brother Tabby from the Mighty Diamonds.
Wow.
He was killed Baker earlier this week. And,
oh, wow. I didn't hear about that.
And then one of my good friends and collaborators in Belize, Oscar Burke, made his transition off to that realm.
Wow.
Yesterday morning.
Wow. Yeah, this past week has definitely been, when it comes to music and arts. Wow.
And then somebody called me and told me that Buddy Wailer said, hey, don't leave me. So he checked out too.
Wow. Wow.
I just have
That's a lot.
Yeah.
That is a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot in 1 week that we've heard about, you know?
Right.
That we've heard about. And that's only what we've heard about.
Right. Wow. Wow. Okay. Well,
that's part of what we call the talk about.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, leading and being misled, and I asked the Lord to guide my heart and to guide my tongue and allow me to say what can give some benefit to everybody. And that's, we know that Gil Scott Heron's birthday was yesterday.
Yeah.
And we have, in New York City, right up the road from you, they have identified 24 different spaces in the city, in parks,
mm-hmm.
dedicated to artists who live there. And so
mm-hmm.
in the Bronx, in St. Mary's Park, that's 146 in Jackson, in the Bronx, in the South Boogie Down, there's a amphitheater in St. Mary's Park, known as the Gil Scott Heron Amphitheater, and that they will have a ceremony today for people to come by and talk about some of his lyrics. You know, young folks all ages, because we know some people at some ages completely understand his lyrics. Because one thing Gil used to always express is that he never tried to be deep. You know. And he didn't write anything. All his lyrics and all his poetry, anybody can understand that. You ain't got to be deep to understand it. So that's the type.
Yep.
That's the type of cat he was. Type of writer he was.
Baba Bilal, how did you meet Brother Gil?
Actually, I met him in a professional way.
Mm-hmm.
But some friends, we were fellow musicians and organizers that went to Bronx Community College, went on to Lincoln University, and they met up with Gil, who was writing songs for a group called Black and Blues at Lincoln University with Victor Brown and Brian Jackson. And some of the, you played Who Played Reparations on My Soul. That was some of the Black and Blues was on that, Who Played Reparations on My Soul. They all met at Lincoln University together. And
wow.
So So since I used to play with them, they called me and told me this cat they was working with at the time. And I was still at Soledad University matriculating, and then I finally got matriculated and got put out of Soledad University for teaching reading and writing. We had a thing on the iron pile. You couldn't spell iron. You couldn't come on the iron pile. You know, brothers in the joint really like to come back from all pumped up and still can't spell their names. Well, we blocked that. But for that, it was good because that's what got me kicked out. They said, we got to get this guy out of here. Parole, you got it. Get out of here. So, but anyway, while I was still in, they had called me and sent me that same album, Small Talk on 125th Street, where he first recorded Revolution Will Not Be Televised and Pooped on My Soul. And, and I said, oh, I know this guy. They was introducing me to it, but Gil Scott Heron and I went to the same junior high school. So I was meeting him in a professional way, and then I'm remembering, hey, this hyphenated name, Gil Scott Heron.
Mm-hmm.
I was already and another brother who played music, Tony Duncanson, who played percussion with the Midnight Band, was we all went to junior high school, Oldenville Junior High School 113, and Gil Scott Heron went there too. But he didn't play music. He wrote detective stories at 12 years old.
Wow.
This cat was a Now look, but dig, at 12 years old, he coming from Jackson, Tennessee, and that's the South.
Mm-hmm.
This everybody from the South, when you come to New York, you get put back behind the grid. Because they got this idea about the South, people from the South is slow and can't keep up, you know.
Right.
So they put you behind the grade. Then they have this special category called PV, pre-vocation, which means you're not going to college, son, because you just ain't got it together like that.
Right.
Gil was in the class. He's writing detective stories. He's smarter than anybody in the school with a degree teaching. He's already marking out his career, you know. And they put him in a PV class, saying he's not college, you know,
right.
And put him one grade behind, you know. That's how I met Gil Scott Heron. So that's just a side story of oppression,
and, right.
and we happened to be in on the same page at that age.
Wow. How many years did you play with the group, with the band, the Midnight Band?
Yeah, I started playing with they say I'm in the host queue. They started playing with him. I started playing with Midnight Band in the spring of 72. Yeah, in the spring of 72.
Mm-hmm.
And I played with them. I played with them like from the spring of 73 till the, I guess around 70, right around there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was just, you know, just doing different things off and on for a while. Then every now and then I'd go back, for a couple of gigs or something. But when I first joined the Midnight Band, we put out an album. We put out an album. The younger people got to Google that word because they don't know what I'm talking about now. We put out an album called First Minute of a New Day. But the artwork had Midnight Band on it, so a lot of people call it Midnight Band. But the actual name of the album was not Midnight Band, was First Minute of a New Day. And that was the first album that Gil and Brian had in a 25-year contract with Arista. And when that 25 years was up, Gil was still around. The idea was that, you know, a person in Gil's status wouldn't be around for 25 years, you know.
Right,
so,
right.
He outlived their predictions, and he was still doing what he was doing, and he was still living and breathing, and he had control over his compositions. And he had control over that purse of money, which he had, which Arista thought they was going to have forever. But he outlived that, and he put together a group from different eras of his past, and we toured the world. And that time it lasted. So the first time was like 4 or 5 years, and then the second time was about 2 or 3 years. But in that two or 3 years that we toured the world, we got to see the elections. First time elections, one man, one vote in South Africa. And we saw the ANC. And that was, we had produced the album called First Minute of a New Day, which had its song on it was Johannesburg, about the
I remember that. Yes.
And when we went to Johannesburg on that second time around with Gil Skinner, and when we played it at the memorial in Philly a few years ago, when the brother shouted, "What's the word?" Everybody in Philly was shouting Johannesburg. But we was in Johannesburg where the music was banned. They didn't know nothing about that. So we said, "What's the word?" And nobody said nothing. Because they never heard Johannesburg. In Johannesburg, the music was banned.
Wow.
It's been, you know. So I'm gonna play with him again because we're putting together something called Pieces of a Band. And we'll be performing in toward the latter part of the year and in the years to come, long as we last. And so hopefully it's with everybody that ever played with him. So everybody that ever played, everybody's not going to make every set, but everybody is going to be welcome to make every set. And that's the way we're designing our future. So when you say, is Brian Jackson coming? Yeah, hopefully he's coming. Is Tony Green coming? But when we have a set, we hope everybody comes to every of them. But, you know, but there'll be... But it'll be people from Gil Scott-Heron's musical past who performed with him and recorded with him, performing together, and we can look forward to that, and we can look forward to putting some dates together for the organizing work that you do, because that's the work we did when we was on the road. We were not, you know, we wasn't just on the road to be on the road as you know, just some musicians on the road having a ball, you know. We was on the road to help organizations get stronger, to raise funds for political purposes, to raise funds for different organizations and to just have a way of legitimizing people coming together in some towns where it was dangerous for them to come to town. But coming
That's
together,
right.
so they come together. So,
and I'm so glad you said that because one of the things that I mentioned earlier was that, you know, too much in our community is going on. We struggle, and our movements have become just a hustle. The genuineness of folk, you know, really wanting to help our people, that seems to have diminished because, you know, for whatever reason, the whole notion of what, you know, what this was about seems to be dissipating.
Yeah.
And so I'm just so glad to hear you convey, you know, as I have and others, the importance of the work. You know, it's okay to make money, but the spirit that goes with the struggle of our people and the fight of resistance and all of that, you know, that's the thing that we're not really seeing. It seems to be connected a lot to photo ops and, you know, getting some money.
Yeah, getting some money and getting famous for
right.
a minute. Yeah.
So I'm glad to, you know, for you to reiterate how important, and even in terms of artists, I mean, we've seen how, you know, and by the way, family, you know, speaking of artistry and poetry and so forth, of course, Baba Bilal was also very close to the great Tupac Shakur. And again,
yeah.
you know, to be able to hear and see and to feel a certain type of something, that's what we're talking about, that's missing a lot in music. And certain parts of artistry today, that genuineness of fighting back is not there.
Mm.
You know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, the genuineness. Of...
That's right.
Well,
so
I'm going to plug, since we're on this topic, I'm going to plug my daughter's book, my daughter, Oba Femi. Just a few months ago, finished the book on Tupac, and it's called A Light on a Hill. It's available through Amazon. And yeah, so Aisha did it. It's a very good job. She put together, she talked to a lot of people from early in Tupac's life. Because she herself was early in Tupac's life. She was
mm-hmm.
a few years older than him. Aisha be 55 in July.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Tupac would be 51 next month.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, my God.
He would be 51 next month. So,
speaking of that, I don't want to regress, but it just came to mind. Just briefly, what were your thoughts about the documentary? Not the movie, but the documentary. Who shot or who killed Tupac? What are you, just briefly, we'll talk about it later at another time, but it just popped into my brain because I just saw it again the other day advertised.
I didn't watch it, you know.
Okay.
I didn't watch the movie either, you know. I didn't watch either one of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was just curious because, again, in talking about how people hustle, you know, of course, one of the key people in that particular production was, what's his name? Crump. He was like the key, you know, figure in it. And I'm like, what? It just didn't connect to me at all, but then it did when I put the pieces together. So I was just curious of what your thoughts were, you know, why he would be so interested in trying to find the murderer or the killer of Tupac, of all things. But anyway.
You talking about Crump?
Yes. The documentary that I'm talking about, it's on, you know, it's on like cable or one of those things. Yes.
Yeah.
He headed up that whole supposedly project to research and investigate and so forth. Mm-hmm.
And see, some things I just don't even bother with. They're so far away from.
I know that's right. I know that's right.
Yeah.
Well, Baba, if we can hold you there for just a few more moments, because I still have a few more questions, but I do see the brother that we wanted to bring in, and I don't want to keep him holding. He's just going to give us a brief report this time, but we're going to definitely get this brother back on in the very near future because of the great work that he and his organization is doing. But we wanted to get this report on Brother Daruba, who, of course, is having some health issues. And there is a call being put out, you know, to support him in whatever way. But we want to speak briefly with the founder of the Community Movement Builders. I think there's a group there in Atlanta as well. So, yes, we're going to bring in Brother Kamal Franklin is going to be joining us now, Baba. So please stay right there. And Brother Kamal, hold on. I mean, I hope this is you because I really needed you to press one so I didn't have to try to dig through there. But Brother Kamal, are you with us?
I am with you. How are you doing?
Oh, great. Okay. I did found you. I thought I recognized the number. All right, my brother. Well, thank you again for I know you have a lot to do with the children, so I really appreciate you taking the time to join us.
No, I appreciate you guys having me on. Yeah, so and it's a pleasure. And it's a pleasure to hear Brother Bilal speak also. So, yeah.
Great, great. All right. So, see, Brother Kamal, I told you, we're family here. This is, you know, we do this thing on the pod and all of that, but for real, it's our family, you know. But, okay, so please share with us a little bit about you, a little bit about the organization, and we're going to bring you back, okay, because I know it's getting late now because we got started late a little tonight, but that's okay. Like I said, we don't try to keep it so tight where, you know, it's just rigid and all of that. So, you know, but so we want to get
really
back to really talk about the organization. I'm sorry, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, really quickly. So Community Movement Builders is a grassroots organization that does community organizing, particularly in Atlanta, but not exclusively. We organize around issues of police brutality, police militarization in our community, and also around gentrification, which is happening in all black urban communities around the country. We fight for sustainable, independent black communities, and we support folks in the neighborhood by doing various different things. So that includes having a sustainability fund. We pay people's rent, mortgage, utility bills, black folks to make sure that they can stay in the neighborhood. We do mutual aid, particularly started under the COVID pandemic, where we give out food and toiletries to about 35, 40 families every other week, and we continue to do that work even today. And we do cooperative development, all enterprises where we have worker owners. Our most successful so far is a CMOS cooperative where we actually sell CMOS gel in several stores in Atlanta, and we've been looking to expand that. We have an aquaponics cooperative, a security cooperative, which actually does cat watch and safety patrols in the neighborhood. So we're basically, you know, structured as an organization that's here to fight for our people, fight for self-determination, and to reuse the radical ideas that we learn from people like Brother Bilal, like Brother Daruba, like Sister Asada. We try to continue on with those radical ideas and support our community.
Oh, Shay, that's what I'm talking about. We got to bring you to Philly. So these folks here, one of my sisters came up with an excellent, I think I shared it with you, and we're going to use it more so. We have Negropeans here. And so we really want to start setting some other examples. So, brother, we are really going to talk because everything you just said is what we are working on developing here in Philly and in other cities. So you already have the model, and we definitely, you know, want to see how we can collaborate. And by the way, we started our gentrification project here in Philly 10 years ago and started going to different cities. We have seven, what we call seven sister cities that we researched, and now can connect the whole thing, that it is a national move that this government has put in place. And we say that gentrification is really a modern day form of genocide. And so we have seven cities that we've researched.
Oh, you're right.
With Detroit. Yeah, we think Detroit is like ground zero. Detroit is like one of the first ones that this particular mode went into effect. And, of course, other cities, Philly, Baltimore, Newark, D.C., et cetera. We've researched all those cities. And lastly, question, does Atlanta have a city plan? And what I mean by that is all the cities that we research, they all have a specific plan, meaning Philly has something called 2035. Detroit had 2050. Newark had 2030, you see, and they outline what those cities are going to look like by that time period. So I don't know. I don't remember if Atlanta.
I'm almost sure that Atlanta also has a city plan. But I think what you said is what's really remarkable is that all of these cities that are run by so-called liberal Democrats, by so-called black politicians who have the interests of the black community, but their real interest is having a black political elite that teams up with a white economic interest.
That's right.
And
that's
they
right.
decide what's best for the city. And usually what's best for the city is not what's best for poor working-class black people. Because right now what's happening is a lot of cities are implementing what we call a Paris model, where the center of the city is taken back over by corporations, those who work for those corporations, middle-class whites in particular, and folks who are working class are pushed out to the rings of the city or the suburbs. And those folks, you know, they no longer have access to city services or the communities they built or other wraparound social services. And so their lives get worse and poorer as people take advantage of all the things that these folks originally built up when other folks didn't want to live in the city. So, you know, what we see happening here, like you said, is a continuation of white racism, ethnic cleansing, genocide, this continuation of folks trying to take from our community and take from our people.
That's right.
And unless we push back and fight back and start to control spaces, what we call, and obviously we didn't coin a phrase, but we implemented an idea of liberated territory, where we feel like it's our job and our role to control pieces of land and then to start thinking how we either create and or control institutions that govern us. Because if we don't control the institutions that govern us, then basically we're slaves to somebody else's control.
There it is. Folks don't get it, that until we have our own, this is a different type of enslavement, but it's call it by any other name, it's still the same. Just a different type, more modernized. And so forth. So, we definitely are going to have some good conversations because we're looking at doing a national pushback black gentrification conference, virtual conference. We're working on that to synchronize some of our efforts, because with our We Charge Genocide 21 project, that's one of the 21 points, gentrification, and also one of the demands. And because groups like the Republic of New Africa and others, they showed us, they gave us the examples, the models of how to obtain land, how to create our own, you know, villages now or whatever we wish to call it now. But still, we've got to do this. So, again, that's for another conversation, but we're going to definitely have that conversation. But at any rate, so let's talk more about our brother Jaruba. We've talked earlier about political prisoners. And so, of course, your organization literally supports when political prisoners come home. So tell us a little bit about that and, of course, what's going on with Brother Daruba.
Sure. I'll start first with the fund that we started, what we called a fund for veteran Black Panther Party members, and we might extend it to other workers of the 60s and 70s generation who are getting older. Folks, you know, one of the things that Druba says is that, you know, there really isn't a retirement plan for revolutionaries. And so that's borne out, right? We have our people who have fought the struggles, the good fights of the 60s and the 70s. And we have to remember our movement was destroyed by the government force. And what was left standing was a voting rights movement, a civil rights movement, and an integrationist movement. And the most militant factions of our overall movement was destroyed, and our leaders were killed, and our organizations were taken apart. And people continued to fight. People were put in prison and jailed, but our folks continued to fight. And we still have people from those organizations and parties around today. And some of those folks are struggling. Those folks are, you know, just like anybody who's struggling in this capitalist society, those folks need support and help. And so part of the work that we see as our organizational efforts was to start a Patreon, to use the sort of the tools that we have in a modern era of things like Patreon. And so we have a Veteran Black Panthers Mutual Aid Fund where we give support to different Black Panther Party members. So far, we've given support to well over 40 or 50 of them. Usually what we do is we have over 400 or approximately 400 donors each month who get various amounts, and it comes out to about $3,500 to $4,000 a month at this particular stage. We continue to try to grow the fund. And we give about, I would say, on average, $600 to $800 a month to approximately 10 Panthers. And we get other donations in, too, to help support that. And, you know, there's no restrictions. If folks wanted to go buy beer just because they wanted to pay, whatever they want, they can use it because they deserve it. They earn it. There's no monetary or anything.
That's right.
All we do is collect the funds. We take no, you know, we take no percentage or anything. If there's any cost associated, we eat those costs because what's important is that people get the resources that they deserve, and that's what our fund. And if you go to patreon.com and search up Mutual Aid for Black Panthers, you'll find that fund. And you'll see we make a list of everybody who we've given to so far, how much we give, when we give, to make sure people understand that those resources are reaching the people that they're giving money for. And so that's really important for us to do. We've been doing that since May 19th, actually, of last year, since Malcolm's birthday is when we actually started the fund. For Daruba, I will say, Brother Daruba Ben Wahad, I'm sure as your audience knows, is a veteran Black Panther Party member, Black Liberation Army, was part of the New York 21. Daruba was in prison for approximately 19 years, and through COINTELPRO documents, he was released. Brother Daruba is now an elder in our community and was recently diagnosed with cancer. He's taking treatments, but in the meantime, again, he has bills. He has to support his family and help his family out. And so we decided as community movement builders to start a fund for him, a GoFundMe campaign. And so if you go on the platform GoFundMe and you look under Daruba Ben Wahad, you'll see the fundraiser that we were doing for him. We're doing it for about now for about 3 weeks, and it's been immensely successful. We've raised over $22,000 for Brother Daruba. We're going to keep the fundraiser up for another 30 days, continue to do what we can to reach out to everybody, to give some support to Brother Daruba in this time. And there's no way we can pay back people like Daruba Ben Wahad for all the work that they've done in our community. But again, as part of our overall work, no work is really for the community if you're not also doing the work to support political prisoners, our freedom fighters of another generation who were our intellectual leaders and our militant on-the-ground soldiers who fought for our liberation. And so if we don't support that, then we really don't support anything. And so that's really important to our mission and one reason why we're doing what we do.
Wow, you are definitely a brother from another mother. All of what you just said is like what we have been advocating, you know, for quite some time in the manner of saying, that, you know, there's no way a people will get respect or groups or organizations or what have you if, in fact, there's not something that's being done to help our political prisoners, because these are people who gave their lives. And so any entity that doesn't see the importance of that, I'm like, yo, something's up with that. I mean, and I'm talking about, you know, from a relatively so-called conscious level, you know, in that regard. And so we don't have a problem in saying it and raising that question, because it has to be said. There's no way that we can sit back and allow brothers and sisters to, you know, be subjected to what they have been subjected to as a result of COINTELPRO and other kinds of, you know, campaigns that we not be aware of. And then they are entrapped or placed into these cages. And then folks out here talking about justice, but yet don't do nothing to support them getting free. You know, that's not only hypocritical, it can no longer be accepted. It cannot be accepted in that manner. And at least, someone has to say, which we are, obviously, someone has to say these things. It's not comfortable. It's not politically correct for some, but what the hell, you know, too bad. It has to be addressed.
No, otherwise
finish that.
Not really,
right,
yeah,
otherwise.
I was just going to say, otherwise, yeah, people are just as I heard the discussion earlier, people are just profiting off of the movement. People are far more interested these days in making money and resources for themselves than actually fighting the real fight for our people to get liberated. And knowing that fight cannot happen without understanding the cost of a fight like that. The cost for our folks has been political prisoners, political exiles, assassinated leaders, and elders who need support. And we must call out their names and call out support and gather support for them as we continue to struggle that they helped us start.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Ashe. Well, my brother, thank you so much for sharing the information. And I look forward to having you back with us again soon, because we got some work that we definitely got to do collectively. You know, we have a saying that we let people know and make it very clear that, you know, we just want to support. So with that said, if it's something that you feel that we can do from MWM standpoint, we have enough folks in place now to really do some things that we've been trying to do for a few years. But as many know, it is rare to bring forward a movement, and particularly if you're talking about self-determination, and not get infiltrated. And so, you know, unfortunately, we had to go through those experiences, but we've survived it. And so with that said, you know, we are here to be of service. We love what your organization is doing. It definitely represents the kind of thing that should be happening in the 21st century. We tell people here in Philly and in other locations, if you're just going to a festival or a conference, or you just on Facebook, you know, whatever the heck folks be doing on Facebook, it just amazes me. But if that's what you call being about the struggle or being about Black folks, then you need to think again. And so with that said, you know, we have excellent examples now. So, you know, we're very thankful for what your organization, what your, you know, group is doing. Because it definitely represents what we believe our ancestors would have us to be doing. You know, in fact, it's a mandate. So thank you again, Brother Kamal.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me on.
All right. Thank you. And you can stay there if you like, but I know you have the children, but if you want to go on mute, you can still stay there and come back in, because we're going to go back to Brother Bilal or Brother Bilal. Okay. So... with that said, I'm going to do just a little segue into talking back with Baba Bilal. And so I'd like to share with you, because as Baba mentioned, there were two kind of Earth Days and also, interestingly enough, a transition date. And so we talked about the Earth Day of the great Gil Scott-Heron, but also, of course, we are talking about both the Earth Day and the transition day of the great Marvin Gaye, born on April 1st and then transitioned on April 2nd. So with that said, I'm going to do a little quick combination for you. Check this out.
Rockets and moonshots and blame it on the helpless. Money we made it, yeah, but before we see it, they take it. Yeah, to make you wanna holler out the way they do your life, make you wanna holler out the way they do your life.
Okay, for those who might not know what that is in connection with things, that of course was vocals, Gil Scott-Heron, and arrangements. But the lyrics, the actual song was Marvin Gaye's Inner City Blues, Make You Wanna Holler. I thought that was a really kind of on-point connection there. But let's go back to Baba Bilal, because I got some other questions I definitely want to ask. Baba, are you still there with us?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, great, great. So Gil Scott-Heron is often called in certain circles the godfather of rap, right? What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I know that he didn't call himself that, and he didn't
right.
He didn't want to be called that in particular. That the development, you know, quite often we come up with the commercial of what is what, but the commercial side of it doesn't even touch the historical significance of the of what they're calling a genre of music.
Mm-hmm.
had been in place in
mm-hmm.
our music since and I know as far as I remember, and I guess as far as, you know, people older than me can
mm-hmm.
remember, you know, I mean, there was always that improvising poetry,
right? Right. Sure.
Music. It didn't start, you know, it didn't start in the 70s or 80s or nothing like that. He was like, you know, he was a student.
Mm-hmm.
Of that style, and he perfected that style. One of his
right.
Under people that preceded him, who I was involved with, which I credit to making me available to be an accompanist, a musical accompanist with Bill Hyman, was the work of the great Oscar Brown Jr. You know,
who put it together
poetry and
yes.
songs that inspired people to struggle, that celebrated
yes.
their struggle, and that I feel like he felt about it, you know. I feel
right.
You know, it's like people they come up with that title in order
right,
to sell
right.
more Bill Scott-Heron music and more rap
gotcha.
Music. So as
gotcha.
But it distorts history. And it distorts our culture. Our understanding of our culture.
Right. Okay. What are some of the more, I'm sure it's like numerous, but one or two, what are some of the, a couple of the more memorable either tours or shows? Is it one or two that really, really stands out for you?
One I talked about was being in Johannesburg.
The one for South Africa. Right.
In the U.S., back in the U.S., one tour that was really, is really memorable,
mm-hmm.
because it, back at a time when we weren't playing, and neither was Earth, Wind, and Fire, and we were still together as the Midnight Band and Earth, Wind, and Fire. At a college in, college in Connecticut, and there were less than 50 people in the audience. It just goes to show you that you can be in front of a crowd one night, and the place is packed. The place is 10 times as big, and it's packed, and everybody's screaming and hollering. And then you can be in a place the next night, you know, and people who came, people, there's less than 50 people in the audience. Over half of them came out of curiosity, not knowing what they were coming to see. So that's a very stark memory, and a reminder to, you know, that you know, of what you, where you're projected and where you're building is, means everything more than just that you're out there, like I mentioned, just being out there on the road, trying to play music and trying to open new markets. It was like, you know, that wasn't the purpose of the band. So the fact that we didn't have an audience one night was not, it wasn't discerning to us. I mean, it was surprising to us, but it was a stark reminder of the reality of people knowing you and people not knowing you, and the reality of how things are marketed, and you know how and where music is marketed to.
Wow. Earlier, when I first came on, I played something, Baba Bilal, that I'm sure some are familiar with, and I'm sure that some are not. And of course, it was, of course, the great Claude McKay. And I opened up with If We Must Die, okay?
Yeah.
And so, again, just to kind of switch for a moment, I mentioned that this is, April is National Black Poetry Month. So that's why I kind of came out with, you know, something that was representing the actual poetry. But with that said, you have, of course, worked with quite a few actual poets. So even though Gil Scott is considered an artist in the context of music, obviously also of poetry, but you have also worked with actual poets such as Sister Sonia Sanchez, and of course Baba Abiodun, and others.
Yeah.
So with that said, and that kind of demonstrates, you know, it kind of shows the, not only the connection, but the kind of real, you know, multifaceted artistry, you see. Because, again, with The Last Poets, that was also music along with poetry, just like with Gil Scott.
Right.
But then you had Sister Sonia, and people like Mary Baraka that primarily did, you know, pretty much, you know, poetry. So where do you see things kind of, you know, with that history and what we see now, where do you kind of see things going?
I see it coming together
mm-hmm.
on a different level, not viewing it from where it views it, but
mm-hmm.
from the in terms of music being tied to the being tied to music and poetry and arts being tied to struggle. I think it's important to notice that it never went out of style. It
mm-hmm.
didn't get as much radio play, as much TV play as possible, because I know because my son, who you know, who's the entertainment, he's in entertainment management. He
mm-hmm.
he started out on the radio, and he did radio. He did community radio at Atlanta Community Station WRFG. He did community radio, and he had a show called The Sound Room, which played all the latest, which played, you know, all the latest and upcoming hip hop that was available.
Mm-hmm.
When he, of course, as people make, they call it advancement. People in the industry as he make an advancement, so he switched over to commercial radio.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But he was famous all around the world as promoting hip hop music on community radio. When he got to commercial radio, he still had his fan base and he still had that artist base, but he could only play a few of the people that he was in touch with that was sending him music on community radio, on commercial radio. Because in commercial radio, they didn't want to hear it. They wasn't having it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
All of the positive music that was being produced, all of the positive rap that was being produced, that he could play in a 2-hour show once a week on community radio, he couldn't play it on commercial radio,
yeah.
on a show that he every night, you know, he couldn't have it because
right.
they had a playlist for him. He played
right.
what they told him to play on that playlist, and that's how the industry goes. Now the
mm-hmm.
industry is not good. You can change different aspects of it by changing different aspects of the industry. That's what liberation is all about. And
mm-hmm.
So we can change different aspects of the industry and make it relate to the needs of the community. So that's what I see happening as more and more people get to learn. As more and more people get promotions toward that glass ceiling and hit that glass ceiling and say, oh, wow, this is it. The more if they started out trying to reach their people, they will expand to more ways that they can reach their people. And they won't give up because they've hit a glass. They know that the glass ceiling was there and you organize around it. And that's what I see
mm-hmm.
more and more. More and more young people are being
mm-hmm.
trained to do, because a lot of the training programs, we, you know, there's more and more people who understand that, who understand the process that the miseducation and corporations take you to, in order to enslave you.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, so some people are trained, are tutored, you know, against that, to go against that,
mm-hmm.
And really develop a process that liberates them in their education,
right.
and allows them to develop entrepreneurship rather than job seeking once as they're at a certain level in their development of skill training, you know, they begin to develop entrepreneurial skills rather than how to fill out an application and how to fake yourself into a position that you don't really be in the first place, just so you can bring some money to pay the bills.
Right.
So that's the whole deal. That's the whole thing of having arts that's liberating. It helps with that whole. It helps with the whole entire process.
You know, and speaking of that, again, family, when I was speaking with Baba Lau earlier, one of the things that we're talking about doing now that hopefully this COVID thing is I'm hoping that we won't see a whole nother version of it, but again, our plan is to now really move forward on the national level and taking real Black arts and culture, to the various cities. There's always a lot of festivals, but what we're finding all over the country is, unfortunately, a lot of the festivals have become so commercial that you're not really getting that real essence, that real
right.
feeling that we once used to have. So we're really going to be working on kind of having a reemergence of a renaissance, if one may. But the whole idea is to mm-hmm. make certain that we bring the kind of spirit back that we used to have at some of these festivals that now, I mean, it's really not a whole lot of them remaining, actually, but the few that were started, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago have now become, you know, kind of diluted, kind of watered down. But I don't know if you got a chance to see the, what was it called? Oh, gosh, it was called the, it was the like the Black Woodstock. I forget the actual name called it. Questlove from Philly kind of helped put that together. But it showed, oh, my gosh, Sly, Nina Simone.
Yeah.
It was just incredible. Yes, yes.
Yeah, I saw excerpts of it and filmed. Yeah, filming of it.
It
was wonderful. And it was like,
well,
there's festivals, so-called festivals. What has happened is that corporations have taken over.
That's
festival,
right.
And they find a way to advertise what they're doing, and they call it a festival. They call it a festival. It's really not a festival. It's a live commercial. Yeah. It's a live commercial. So it's like, it's not a festival. Is a way a community celebrates itself, different the achievements of the community. That's what festival does, or different, it's an expression of the community's awareness of itself. So how could you have a cool, referring to cigarettes?
That's right.
A cool festival. It's not a festival. and so that's really what, you know. There are very few festivals, and then what festivals come up, the corporations try to take them over. I remember in
That's
Atlanta
right.
we had Seagram 7 offered to sponsor Kwanzaa. Yeah, and we had to speak about some people who want to take that Seagram 7 money and say, you know, but it's like, you're going to take, part of what we're celebrating is the fact that we have a day of our own. We have a festival of our own, which takes place. People don't get drunk at this festival. That's one of the things. That's one of the hallmarks of it.
That's right.
That people don't get Kwanzaa. We don't have that. So how are you going to have Seagram 7 be a sponsor? How are you going to advertise Seagram 7? So they try to take over the festival, and if we had not struggled, in Atlanta, and allowed that to happen, it may have taken place, and it may be taking place on a much more subtle level, in places. I'd advise people to say, I can't think of anywhere to point to now, but look everywhere, because it creep up on us. They're trying to creep up on us. And culturally, what we have established, what has survived. What we've been survived with, corporations are trying to take it up with.
That's right. Well, we have a very interesting approach that we're going to be implementing, and it will we are certain kind of, let people see that you can do certain things. You just have to be, you can use a certain type of discretion and a certain type of integrity. You can have community partners or other kind of partners, but you need to be selective about that and also make certain that you don't get in so deep that it begins to overshadow whatever it is about. Here in Philly, we used to have all kinds of festivals. Some were small festivals, but they were community oriented.
Yeah.
And what ended up happening here, Baba, was that the politicians, began to take over the community festivals. In other words, the groups and organizations in our community used to have the festivals, but what ended up happening, the council people and the state reps and all of that would partner with the corporations, and then it would override whatever the community folk were doing. And so ultimately, folks just kind of, said, well, we're not going to do ours anymore because, it was just the politicians could bring in all this big stuff, you see.
Right,
Now a good 80% to 90% of the festivals in Philly that are supposed to be community oriented are generally sponsored by or presented by the politicians, which bring in the corporations, the gas company, the electric company, the phone company, and these other entities under the guise of community partnership. But in reality, it's something else. You see?
Yeah, you become an ad.
That's right. That's right.
Turn on the TV every few minutes. There's a mention of the corporation that's sponsoring that, that's paid for that time.
And the other piece to that, Baba, is what happens, it gives the corporations the capability to say, well, you see, we gave back to the community, and they raise your rates as your electric bill and your gas bill and all of that goes up, and then you complain about it, but then they say, oh, but you see, we gave back to the community.
Yeah, but all they did was advertise.
I mean, it is just such a game that's being played on us, and folks are buying into it. And, now the big thing is to give away, food, to give away food and, other things that people need. And then, again, the corporations are using that as a way of saying, well, we're giving back to the community. And so, you know, activism, real activism to fight, you know, again, gentrification and, you know, environmental racism and other things, it kind of, you know, dissipates because people buy into what these corporations are supposed to be, you know, doing for the community to help the community. Right. But the big issues are not really being addressed.
Yeah, they'll limit what can be discussed from the stage. You can only discuss on the mic what your sponsors allow you to discuss.
That's a good point. Absolutely. So it destroys it.
Come in, they encircle us, and then you say, well, I can't have so-and-so on the show because he's going to say something about something that the sponsor doesn't approve. So it becomes there.
It's amazing. It's just so amazing. But you're right that this is what's going on. And, you know, our program, again, is about speaking truth to power. And so, family, that's what we're committed to doing. We are now in our 13th year. This month we will celebrate 13 years, and we're getting ready to up it, y'all. We're getting ready to hit YouTube and Patreon so that we can now advance in our communications. Before we close out, Baba, this is kind of a different area, but I would be remiss if I did not have you to mention you know, and we'll talk more about it as it develops, but you have something coming up at the end of the month. And again, I think it's very important because next week we're going to be commemorating the great Paul Robeson, his Earth Day. And with that, we'll be doing some sessions in regards to Recharge Genocide and actually the work, the humanitarian work and the justice work of the great Paul Robeson. So with that said, you have something coming up at the end of the month. Would you share with us briefly? And again, I know it's still developing, so we'll bring you back once, you know, some of the other things are in place, but, you know, at least you can let people know to mark their calendar.
Okay. Well, what we have coming up we do have coming up at the end of the month. It's very important, and the Black Belt Coalition on Human Rights, and we're engaged with one of the groups that we worked through to develop the coalition was the United Nations declared International Decade for People of African Descent. And we're engaged right now in developing a report that'll be to the United Nations, but a report that will not just be to the United Nations, but will be to our people, recommendations on ways to avoid these various forms of genocide. The report will be in the fields of, well, the one that myself and Sister Empress, we're very happy to be have joining us, is on justice, justice information. We have the other subcommittees are health and wellness, land retention and land development, cooperative economics, relevant education and cultural education. Land retention. Community economic development and voting rights. Those are the other subcommittees that we're working on, developing a report that'll be a report to the United Nations, because we got the impetus to begin doing this work in this fashion because of the United Nations declared international decade. But we understand that the purpose of the United Nations is not to liberate the oppressed peoples, the colonizers, colonial forces of the United Nations. And what they have, we've had some very brilliant people who've created some other ways of talking about world peace, which may have to have them include forums that we have to discuss such things as colonization and why continued oppression is not leading to world peace. So since we've created these forums, we want to now exploit these forums and use the United Nations and then be able to develop relationships with other international bodies that we can be included in.
Right. That's right.
Because we find the United Nations, in just like the General Assembly, includes nations. The African Union, for instance, who we would be giving a report to, expresses that nationhood is a category that they see the diaspora in, but the diaspora, we have not organized ourselves to present ourselves as a nation, even though we're talking about it. We're going through such steps now, but it's important to know that the AU, the African Union, already recognizes it. So when we're ever at that step where we can do that, we already have a seat at the table. There's already a table and a seat at the table waiting for us to become organized to the point where 64 nations in the world will recognize African people in the diaspora, African people in the Western Hemisphere. And in the Western Hemisphere, where is the majority in North America and South America, in Brazil, you know, you have the majority of the Africans in the diaspora, and also the Organization of African States, which is mainly nations in the Western Hemisphere that recognize that amongst the Africans, you have a distinct group of people that exhibit nationhood, who just have not organized themselves to that extent in a proper way and fashion. But we have the Organization of American States that already recognizes our nationhood and we're ready to recognize. They recognize us as a nation and as a member nation of the Organization of African States. And then so we have other international bodies to report to, and not only report to, but to ask them to examine the report and wherever they can support the recommendations and of the things that we are doing toward building toward nationhood and building toward liberation of our nation,
that
support, we will, that's where we're going with it, you know, and that's the 29th and the 30th, and we've engaged Livingston College. Professor Hassan Crockett has given us his students. He teaches political science and history. So we have students of this one professor at Livingston College who will help us with this, with develop this report and recommendation to international bodies and to our people. We also want to represent to assemblies within the with amongst us here in the United States, like the Southern Workers Assembly, the National Black Political Assembly, which is being reconvened to their 50th anniversary, and different organizations and assemblies that take place where people will seriously listen and develop and follow through with some of the recommendations. Hopefully there'll be enough engagement where people will follow through with all of them, which will put us another level of being on our way to being free. And again, that's the 29th, 30th of April, the end of this month,
mm-hmm.
the 30th of April. And it will be virtual. Virtual, and although it won't be virtual, it will be the people who are involved in the committee for Permanent Plus, people that we've invited to work with us. So they'll be, it's like we have seven committees, seven subcommittees, and we have at least 15 guests of each committee. So we have we have like over about 120 participants, and we'll also be able to have alternates to those guests, and we don't know how wide we'll make the virtuosity of it outside of those participants. But again, we're doing this in order that we develop a report that the masses of our people can see.
Right. Let me just add.
Yeah.
Okay, let me just add to that, because we got to get ready to close out. But I want to add a couple of things. One, that it's so important that we do these steps and become as organized as possible. You know, over this past year or so, I've literally had some relatively intelligent people to make comments like, "Well, you know, why are y'all going to the UN? And why, you know, there's nothing you can do at the UN. They're just, you know, it's the same old thing." You know, and what you said about how they're, you know, really about some entities, really about just, you know, recolonizing us. But again, mm-hmm. I'm glad you pointed out the other aspects and realities. And let me just make this clear to people that if you don't have a plan of action about how you're going to help our people be free here, then you really need to, like, think very carefully about how you're going to criticize what other folks are attempting to do when you're not bringing that to the table. So I know a few, and we can document what I'm going to say, family. So a few months ago, of course, Mumi Abu-Jamal, as well as Brother Sunda Adakoli, came down with COVID inside of there. And at one point, at least for Mumia, it was very, very serious. And folks took action to the degree of multi-level stuff, grassroots stuff, but also took action in submitting paperwork to the United Nations.
Right.
Now, so what we're saying is that the combination of things helped to get things moving. Because now it was documented at the UN and some of the officials put on record that this was an atrocity to have these men subjected to what they were subjected to during the time of COVID, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, given the fact that Mumia was extremely ill. So the point is, unfortunately, there are modes of operations that have to happen. It has to happen.
Right.
And not because, oh, we think they or it is going to do so much. No. there are processes that have to happen for many different reasons other than the very obvious. And some is to educate the people. Some is to help to motivate them to take other actions. There's different things that people can do. So I just wanted to point that out because we have to really stop thinking that there's a one way to do things. That's just ridiculous.
Right.
Ridiculous.
Right.
And we do a disservice when we don't at least attempt to grasp what other folks are doing for our liberation, you see. So I just wanted to do that sidebar because, again, you know, I oftentimes, well, not often, but periodically I get these comments about, you know, well, why are y'all doing this? Or why? And I'm asking you, well, what's your plan? what are you talking about doing? You know, because other than that, you really need to be quiet, as far as I'm concerned. But I digress.
Yeah, that's a big part of the point. The seven subcommittees that we've developed within the Black Belt Coalition for Human Rights are the seven subcommittees that are based on the seven issues that were raised at the end of the Civil War when the Secretary of the Army and the President and the Vice President of the United States and General Sherman of the Union Army met with Africans who fought in the Union Army. And created the turning tide in the military, military conflict called the Civil War. Now, whatever people think, you know, whatever people know about the reasons for the Civil War, is that African men and women took advantage of it and joined the army and brought it to the negotiating table, brought our freedom to the negotiating table, regardless of what their reasons were for those who fought the war, regardless of what their reasons were. African men and women joined the fighting organization that was fighting the war and brought the war to a clear victory and brought ourselves to the negotiating table to negotiate our self-determination and a direction forward, and that the majority of those people picked these same seven issues that we had to deal with, and the majority of these people voted to all except one. In fact, I believe it was like maybe 15, mostly clergy. And all except one voted to have established a separate nation, not to crawl back on the plantation after all that. And so this is, you know, so this is what we're letting people know, too, that this is not something that we just thought of. We just thought of in 2015. This is something we've been thinking of and we've been working on and we've been building on even before this meeting happened between the Union soldiers who were still armed at the time of the meeting as well. That was another decisive factor. We had an armed population of Africans who were making these decisions and who were meeting with the government of the United States. So we have this to build on, you know, that we're not taking a program. They didn't ask to be involved in civic engagement, to be involved in economic development, to be involved in land retention, to be involved in reparations, you know, to be involved in education, to be involved in voting, to be involved in the mechanism of administering justice and of administering health care to our people as a way of integrating. They did it as a way of establishing self-determination so that people could survive and thrive regardless what happened to the what happened to those entities who were here. And and so that's what, you know, that, so that's what we're continuing. If people, and that's why we're taking it to the international level, because we are already there internationally. People are wondering why we haven't done certain things.
That's right.
And the why.
And especially given the fact that Brother Malcolm in 1964, did the presentation to the African Union. You know, and certainly other things have happened, but I'm just saying, you know, come on. Anyway, Baba, we got to get ready to close out. We have one caller that wanted to make a comment or a question before we do. I don't want to have that person just sitting there. So, caller, you are at 2550. Your mic is open, and you can certainly bring your question or comment. Thank you for holding.
Hi, you guys have had a very interesting conversation. You touched base on so many different things. There's a few things I wanted to kind of comment on. Listen, I agree with everything that you guys are stating as far as our, when it comes to our people. Me personally, I try to do what I can. I can elaborate with that. But I've always kind of felt like in order to change things and to make a difference, we can't, like, just do things. You know, I'm always going to the UN and everything like that. I have no problem with it. But I think in order to change a nation and to rebuild us, we have to start with the youth. We have to start with our children. And we can't expect to see these changes overnight. Because once we start, you know, changing their mindset and educating them and preparing them, then that's how we will begin to see the changes. Another thing that I wanted to kind of just touch base on real quick, I live in Philadelphia. I'm originally from Florence, South Carolina, and born and raised, my mother and my father. My mom's side of the family is from, like, the Morris Love community. They came through. They were from Sierra Leone. But my father's side, you know, we have done a lot of research. Like, they was always here. And I just think that a lot of times when it comes to the history and when it comes to talking about, I really think it's also to really point out that there are, like, towns and communities that still exist, mostly in the suburban areas. Like, my father's side was in Effingham, South Carolina. That is a community where my family, from doing a lot of my research and the keepsakes, that they're all in the same area. They fought in wars. Everybody still owns their land. They never gave up their land. They have their own communities. My grandmother was a member of the Black Farmers Association, and they still have a lot of the African culture, and it was called Gula. When I moved to Philadelphia, people used to tease me how I talk. Now Gula is literally considered to be an official language taught in Harvard University. And I just think that it's very important to, education starts with everything. It has to start, it starts with education, but also, real quick, I get a lot of flack for this, but the women, we play a major responsibility to change this nation, and it's no disrespect to the men, only because whether you're in a two-parent household or not, the person that typically spends the most child is with the mother. So you as a mother are nurture and making the decisions and, you know, being a wife or doing the best that you can. We do play a major responsibility to ensure that we can set the tone. Because right now our cities is crazy, our youth is lost, they have no guidance, they have no leaders. And, you know, I'm a revolutionary by heart. You know, I remember having conversations with my boys when they was younger, and I had to point out to them, even when you look at through the Nonviolent Coalition Committee, the Black Panther, when you look at those guys, they was very young. Look at the ages. They was very young, but it was politically mature. And you know, the mindset was different. You understand? And when we see what they did to destroy these young guys and these young organizations, and these guys are very young, then it will help people to understand how the music changed in the rap. I had posted something on Facebook years, many, many years ago. It was a poem by Sata Shakur, who I really adore. And one of the things that she stated was that music is like a double-edged sword. It can help revolutionize people with their mentality, what they're thinking, and, you know, and then it could be detrimental. And, you know, from what I've witnessed and, you know, growing up, you know, I was born in 1974, so I'm not old, but I'm old. I see the difference. I see the different generations. And the generation underneath us, they don't have no leaders. They don't have nothing. They don't have good music. They don't have nothing at all. So when you understand all of these things, that's why I think it's important. It comes with education. It comes with a lot with the mother and rebuilding our families. You know, we could still do, you know, the other things, but to have a generational change, it's going to take a little time, but it has to start with the younger generation.
Okay. Well, sister, thank you. And if I may, I'd like to respond to that briefly. And it's this. Let me first ask you a question. So are you presently either homeschooling your children or sending them to an independent school?
Well, my children are all adults now. My youngest is 24.
Okay. I mean, were they homeschooled or sent to an independent school?
They were not sent to independent school, but what I can tell you, the oldest, they started in private school, but I found a school in Europe,
okay.
Right? It was Waukesha.
I just wanted to
now,
yes
was
no
a very
on
good.
That. And the reason and why I'm asking these questions, the reason why I'm asking the questions is because two things. One, I would strongly suggest that we look at, in this day and age, a holistic approach. And what I mean by that is it's not just going to be education. It's not just going to be arts and culture. It's not just going to be politics. It's going to be a combination.
Right.
So when you study our history, culture, movements, you will see that the various components that were not there at different stages. So
right.
Now we've been able to critique some of that, and as a result, know to combine it. In other words, you have two arms. You have two legs, two
right.
eyes, two ears. So each one of those components operate differently. So it would not be in our best interest to just say, well, we have to do this. Of course we do.
Right.
If you're dealing with things from a holistic approach, you are going to do the whole thing, which unfortunately...
I agree with you 100%.
Well, here's my point. So education is definitely a component. Now, note, but education should also be as it is from us.
Most of us,
since I listened to you and I didn't interrupt at all, right? So I'm just saying, most of our people that are conscious or trying to be or whatever tend to send their children to the enemy. And do not support independent anything.
Okay,
so
I agree, but why keep it school?
Sister, hold it. Can I finish what I'm saying, please?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
So,
no disrespect.
Thank you. So, again, when we make these analogies and do the research and assessment based on that, what we begin to see is we've lost a lot of things, meaning from a historical perspective, our people had land, our
right.
people had various other things,
right.
and then this government, this system destroyed it. One of the reasons why some of that was able to happen, and this is why now we're focusing on looking at how to secure things a little better based on history.
Okay.
When you do not have your own government or at least something that resembles that or is attempting to do that, that means you will more easily be under the jurisdiction of somebody else. So in order for you to establish a position in the rest of the world, because note, Tulsa, Rosewood, and the other communities that this government destroyed was able to do so readily because of many reasons, but one thing that we know for certain is they had no allies.
Right.
our blessing, or one of our blessings and lessons that we learned today, is we have that capability. This is why in connecting with other entities, you're covering your back. Because if you try to build something in this country and the enemy sees that it's really something serious, you're leaving yourself wide open for immediate destruction, because you have no other voices anywhere else to attempt to say, yo, wait a minute, you see. So we learn from the past in order to secure a better future. And lastly, I have to ask, because you're absolutely correct, the Million Woman March brought 2.5 million black women together.
Okay.
And as you do the research, you can tell there was no corporate sponsoring, there were no benefactors, there was no government, nothing. We asked no permission. However, in demonstrating self-determination with a platform and a plan, why would black women not want to support that? So my question to you, sister, and I'm going to yield. My question to you is, do you support black women in terms of some actual work that we're and again, note, I'm not talking about in our community per se. We have thousands of women and groups do stuff in the community. White women ain't playing, meaning they're organized on a national level, meaning we stay in our, and don't get me wrong, we should do in our communities. There's no question. And we have done it for the past 400 years. When does it become synchronized so that whatever we're doing here in Philly, the sisters in New York, the sisters in Atlanta, the sisters in North Carolina know what we're doing, we're connected, and we're doing some things together. Now, are you supporting something like that?
Absolutely. And let me just, I can touch base on everything you just said. First, let me just say this. I agree with you 100%, sister. And I'm not disputing you at all. And I agree. And the example that when you asked about the school thing, my kids went to Waikisha, which is a African structured school. This school was really next door to Roman Catholic. And these kids at that time, when they were younger, this school was excelling and was out performing all schools with academically and sports wise. And
until we have our own schools, sister, because when you study and do the research, charter schools were put in place in order to dismantle independent schools.
Okay,
and in Philadelphia,
I don't know if it was charter independent. What I can tell you, it was an all-black school, a very good school. And you're right, because what they did was, because these kids were excelling, they took the school from the location that was off of Broad and Spring Garden, I think, right next to Roman Catholic, and put this school.
It was called Waukesha.
And they removed it to North Philadelphia. So I understand what you're saying. Now, in regards to me supporting black women, I support black women. I support my nation. I support my people. And it's interesting because me and my
girlfriend. What nation are you a part of? Sister, what nation are you a part of? May I ask? What nation are you a part of?
I support my people, my black people, my brothers.
No, that's not what I'm asking you from an organized level. Not from an organized
level. Well,
I'm
trying to tell you what I'm doing. You asked me to
Let
me explain. I can answer that question. I mean, I'm not.
I was trying to simplify it because we are running out of time, and I wanted to simplify it. But I definitely would like to get you back on one of our discussions when we have, particularly our sisters, because there's a difference between supporting our people and and developing a actual community / nation building apparatus.
I agree 100%.
Okay. So if I may, I would like to take your number. I certainly would love to talk with you in the future. And I thank you, sister, because you made some excellent points, and definitely it's things that
we need to elaborate on. And I'm going to yield, and I should have did it a little sooner because I forgot Baba Bilal's still sitting there, and
if
certainly as an elder, if he wanted to convey something, I would love for him to.
Yeah. Thank you for hearing me out.
It's definitely a pleasure, sister. Baba, did you have something you wanted to share?
I'm probably giving you my number.
Oh, I have it. I see it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I just need your name. I'm sorry. Baba, I just need your name, sister.
My name is Latasha.
Thank you, Latasha. Thank you.
And you know, it's funny, me and my best friend, we were talking tonight about we just got approved from Chase for a business loan for a business that we tried to start. And the goal, well, her vision, because we have the same vision to help our people and rebuild our nation, but her expertise is, you know, education, you know, educating the parents, the children as far as proper eating, you know, things that can help us to keep our minds right, our bodies right, and, you know, for us to evolve and to become, you know, things that we can do to rebuild. I can't do it all at one time. You know, it's a step-by-step process, but I support the movement. You know what I mean? I'm for my people. You know,
All right. Well, let's let Baba get a few words in because we're going to have to close out. Baba, you want to share something?
Yeah, I just want to say right quickly, you know, that I do not want people to remember that the work we do within the Black Belt Coalition on Human Rights is, and the work we do related to the United Nations Independent Declared International Decade for People of African Descent, is part of the work that we're doing on behalf of political prisoner at war, Imam Jamil Al-Amin, formerly known as H-Rap Brown. It is his attorney, Musa Don Fodio, is also the counsel for African descendants in the Western Hemisphere. He serves within the as part of the United Nations Council on Human Rights. He's organizing on behalf of that. And he's also Imam Jamil's legal advisor on international human rights. So we want people to know and to understand how this work is connected. And we would like for people to you're either on your phones. Those of you who are not on your phones, you can take out your phones. Those of you who are on your phones, you can write this information down, and that is www.freeimamjamil.com. That's the website, www.freeimamjamil.com. That's the website for the students for Imam Jamil.
I-M-A-M-J-A-M-I-L,
imamjamil.com, freeimamjamil.com. And it'll take you to an action items that deal with sending letters to congressmen. In order to have Imam Jamil return to Georgia. That's one of the first action items, but if you go to that website, freeimamjamil.com, it'll take you to action items that will that designed to bring freedom and exoneration of Imam Jamil. And another thing that we're telling people to go is to go to the website www.imamjamilactionnetwork.org. Both of those websites are very important. And one of the action items that you'll find at the second website is to support the COINTELPRO full disclosure bill, H.R. 2998. You can go to that website, and you can also look up that bill, H.R. 2998, to see how to support that bill. That will also be in support of political prisoners. Just wanted to make sure that we're connecting the dots as we move from step to step, because we're trying to get Imam Jamil out, who's been involved in every step of the work that we've talked about doing in terms of liberating our people. He has been about every step of the work that's represented in the outward work we do. We want to make sure that part of the work we do, a big part of the work we do, is designed to free Imam Jamil and all political prisoners and free them all.
I'm all for it. I used to have a sign in my window that says, Asafa Shakur is welcome here. You know, so I did just put on the website, so I got all the information that you just shared with me, and thank you. You know, I just want to learn anything that you help me, you know, help us. I'm all for it.
Well, sister, I have your number. I will definitely be contacting you because, again, when it comes to our women and girls, again, MWM is, I mean, there is no other. I just got to say that. And for our women not to support our work, it says a lot, not just about us, but other people see that. You mentioned Sister Sada Shakur. Well, Sister Sada Shakur's message was read at the Million Woman March. During that time, you could not stream stuff in because, of course, she's in Cuba. But she sent us her message that we read in English and in Spanish. And our connection with other black women all over the world that are serious about our liberation. And one of the key things that we made very clear is that we're not feminists. We are black women. We're the mother of civilization. So we recognize very clearly that the children, see, we don't have to say we got to do it for the children. When you know that you're a black woman, that's automatic. So we help other sisters to know more about who they are, know thyself. And again, we have a sisterhood. So, you know, later this week we'll definitely connect. There's a rally coming up here in Philly that will kick off a national campaign. The national campaign is for the elimination of violence and abuse of our women and girls nationwide. Right. And this encompasses not just, this is sex trafficking, rape, beatings, incarceration, etc. So, and we've been doing that work consistently. But again, you really have to know and see the bigger picture to make certain types of real kinds of evaluations. So again, that's what we hear. That's the work we do, and we do it without government or corporate sponsoring. Mm-hmm. You see?
Okay. Well, you know, I'm totally in support of that. I'm totally in support of that.
Okay. You know, all right, sister. Thank you.
All right, thank you, and you have a wonderful evening.
Oh, thank you. All right, family, listen, we are going to close out. We've been talking with a beautiful sister, Sister Latasha, I believe I wrote down. Yep, uh-huh. And I'm going to be connecting with her later on this week. Of course, we just talked with, and have been talking with Baba Bilal Sunni Ali, who was, of course, one of the original members of the Midnight Band, shared a lot of important and wonderful information. Of course, earlier we had Brother Kamal with us. And, family, we thank you all again. We're going to close out with some more poetry, some more, you know, dynamic thoughts from Gil Scott-Heron. And I want to remind you that the Million Women March has now, of course, developed its own Black Women's Literary or Writers Guild. And then we are in the process of asking sisters to send us your poetry because we want to publish it for next year. And we're also sending it out into the prisons because we're looking to get sisters to write in our publication their poetry and other kinds of writings, but also their artwork. We plan for March to do a national or have a national exhibit available from sisters that are incarcerated. We want to be able to demonstrate their artwork and also support some of their efforts in whatever their needs are, as well as their freedom, okay? Because a lot of times we do not hear much about the women who are in prison, just in general. And that was, in fact, one of our platform issues. And so we are following through now with what we said in every kind of way with bringing forward the Million Woman Ministries. So with that said, family, we thank you all again. Baba Bilal, any closing comments for us?
Just free all political prisoners, free the land, free them all.
Ashe, ashe. All right, family, again, we thank you all, and you know what we're going to say before we close out. We're going to leave you, as we oftentimes greet you, in the spirit of Ma'at and Hotep, because when we talk about justice, we talk about it from a Ma'atic perspective. That's why we say education is important, but it has to be a certain type of education. And so justice for us is truth, justice, balance, order, reciprocity, righteousness, law. These are principles that represent the type of justice that we are striving for. And we say if there can be no justice, meaning Ma'at in this case, there definitely cannot be Hotep, meaning peace. Because you know we say, blah, 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 there's no justice, there's no what?
No justice. Peace. No peace.
There you go. And listen, that's what we're talking about each and every day. All right, family, thank you all again. We'll be back next week at the same time. This is our 13th year. We ain't missed a beat yet and have no intention of doing so. We're actually upgrading very, very soon again with YouTube and Patreon. In the meantime, we're going to leave out with none other than Gil Scott Harris. Baba Bilal, thank you so much. And, of course, you, family, we always thank you as well. Peace to you all. Thank you, sister.
Thank you as well.
We beg your pardon because the pardon you gave this time was not yours to give. They call it due process, and some people are overdue. We beg your pardon, America. Somebody says another man gonna break a window, gonna steal a hubcap, gonna smoke a joint, another man gonna go to jail. The man who tries to steal America is not in jail. Get caught with a nickel bag, brother man. Get caught with a nickel bag, sister lady, on your way to get your hair fixed. You'll do big things, and big things is time, but a man who tries to fix America will not do time. Say they're going to snap his wrist. Going to retire him with $850,000, and America was shocked. America leaves the world in shock. Unfortunately, America does not lead the world in deciphering the cause of shock. $850,000, they said, and the people protested, so they saw like we're giving $200,000. And I said, okay, that's better. I'd like to retire with $200,000 someday. San Quentin, do not San Clemente. Do not pass gold, go directly to jail. Do not collect $200,000. We beg your pardon, America. We beg your pardon because somehow we fight us. Vets fight us, no pardon in the ghetto. They had national security. But do you feel secure with a man who tried to steal America back on the streets? What are the results of the pardon?
Remember, when there's causes, there's results. And the results is always deeper still. We now have oatmeal man. $850,000 Anytime you find someone in the middle, anytime you find someone who is tepid, anytime you find someone who is lukewarm, anytime you find someone who has been in Congress for 25 years and no one ever heard of him, you've got Oatmeal Man. Oatmeal Man straddling uncomfortably yards and feet of barbed wire. It's hard to live in the middle all the time. Oatmeal Man, the man who said you could fit all of his black friends in the trunk of his car and still have room for the Republican elephant. Oatmeal Man. But there was no crime committed. Oatmeal Man says that America, in 1975, your president will be a 1913 Ford. Regressive. Circle up the wagons to defend yourself from nuclear attack. Oatmeal Man. Reminiscent of 1964's AUH2O Goldwater. Thank God he didn't win, but Oatmeal Man didn't win. Did you vote for him? I didn't vote for him. But that's the first result, and the second would be the Dread Rockefeller. Doubtlessly being promoted for the job he did at Attica. 43 dead and millions of Americans once again in shock. Now this is being promoted for the job he did on the streets of New York City where the Bushes sell the drugs that the government allows in the country, and then they do time. They do life and death or life and death behind bars while William Saxby says he's going to dismiss the Lord and Furlough program. And Brother Richard X of Buffalo, New York, faces 1,365, did he say, 1,365 years behind bars for participating in Attica. And Rockefeller faces being the vice president of this country, and all is calm and quiet along the white sand at San Clemente. We beg your pardon, America. We beg your pardon once again. Because we found out that 7 out of every 10 black men behind jail, and most of the men behind jail are black. 7 out of every 10 black men never went to the ninth grade, didn't have $50 and hadn't had $100 for a month when they went to jail. So the poor and the ignorant go to jail while the rich go to San Clemente. We beg your pardon, America, because we understand now much more deeply than we understood before. But we don't want to take the pardon back. We want to issue some more. Pardon Brother Frank Willis, the Watergate security guard. He was only doing his job. Pardon H.R.A.P. Brown. It was only burglary. Pardon Robert Vesco. It was only embezzlement. Pardon Charles Manson. It was only mass murder. And pardon us while we get sick. Because they pardoned William Calley, 22 dead, and America in shock. And we understand all the more deeply, and we beg your pardon. As unemployment spirals towards 7%, and it seems like 70% in my neighborhood, as unemployment spirals and as we watch cattlemen on TV shoot cows in the head and kick them in the grave while millions are starving in the Sahel, in the Honduras, and maybe even next door, we understand all the more deeply as Boston becomes Birmingham, becomes Little Rock, becomes Selma, becomes Philadelphia, Mississippi, becomes yesterday all over again. We understand and we beg your pardon. We beg your pardon, America, because we have an understanding of karma. What goes around comes around. And we beg your pardon for all of the lives and all of the people who've been ruined and who look forward to next year because they cannot stand to look at this one. We beg your pardon, America, because the pardon you gave this time was not yours to give. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you.